copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
How should we then live in the information age? I had the audacity of using the title of Francis Schaeffer's book, and as I was submitting the proposal for this meeting, this name kept ringing in my head. I couldn't take it off. And obviously I thought, it's many years since you've read that. How can you relate to that? You know, what did Francis Schaeffer want to say? So some weeks ago I went back and I started to look at his video about how should we then live. And he basically walks us in an absolutely unique way and very digestible and very down-to-earth. He walks us through the Western civilization, through the development of thoughts and of culture, only to end up and say, well, if this is what was ahead of us, how should we then live? Where is our place? How do we relate to this? And I think it is very appropriate to ask the same question when we think about technology. Because technology is all around us, it's really taking a grip of us, and I don't think there is anyone in this room that at one point or another, in one form or another, you didn't ask a question that would fall under, how should I then live? How should I then use this? How should I relate to my children or to my work or to my entertainment or whatever? So what I'm basically trying to do, and I stated here my title just so that you know that I come from an academic perspective. I work at the university, and I found that sometimes it's useful to take that annoying part of being an academic, of having to go through the theory of this and the theory of that, and you know, through all that tedious academic work, but it helps you to sort of put things in place. If you don't find the right theory, you are very welcome to develop your own, something that I haven't done and I don't think I will, but I like to think that I start to learn how to take someone's theory and use it to explain certain things about what is around me. And basically, this is what I'm trying to do today. Now, I think you've had enough lectures by now. If you were a good ELF attendant, you've attended all the plenary sessions, all the networks, and some workshops in the afternoon, and then the evening sessions, and by now you are fed up. Well, not fed up, but tired. Let's put it that way. Not fed up. We're still hungry, and we can still take more. But you are tired of lectures. So today I want to provoke you to build up whatever we're doing today, but to build it together. Okay? So there will be a little bit more engagement. I hope you read the notes that said, bring on your mobile technology. And I hope you have your phones with you and stuff. If not, you can think about them. But it will be a little bit more engaging. Talking a little bit more about myself, I want to show you my family. Now, I have three children, a daughter and two boys, and that's my handsome husband, looking like a Russian Tsar or a railroad officer, as somebody said, you look more like the Romanian railroad officer than a Tsar. But I had always a very hard time getting my kids to sit for a family picture. And actually, the few times when I tried to do that, especially around Christmas, I ended up in tears because the whole house were teasing me about it and they were making faces and I couldn't get a really good picture. And this is one of the rare good pictures that we were able to get in Prater. They had fun. They thought it's fun. So for a long while, we use this as our picture. Now, some years, actually last summer, as I was giving a presentation on technology, I said, I've kept using this picture, and it's not that appropriate for technology. It's appropriate to show that my family is very artistic. My husband is an artist. My younger son is a musician. My daughter is very artistic. My daughter-in-law now. Also, we had to do an updated picture, okay, because my daughter and my older son, they got married. And I thought that's going to be very hard to get them together and get now another family picture. And I came up with an idea, and you would not believe, but my son and my son-in-law worked for about 5 hours to get this picture. Sorry. This is my camera. And now we think this is so much better. You know, my younger son wasn't even at home when we did this. We found his picture somewhere, and obviously my dog didn't have to sit still for the picture. And as you can tell, we're all Mac persons. Everyone is portrayed on his own technology. And I decided to start with this as a point. It doesn't mean that our family is completely disruptive and disconnected and sick. But I think to a certain degree, it portrays a lot of what our relationships are these days. I obviously talk more with my daughter on Facebook or another technology than we do face to face. Okay? So in a way, I want to challenge you to think about yourselves and your families and your environment from the perspective of technology. And you don't have to feel bad if you're too into technology or if you're not at all into technology, but we can all see where exactly we are. So why not we go back to knowing about each other, and I want two of you to turn to each other, preferably somebody that you don't know, and just say your name, why not your denomination? Maybe at the end of it we can make a study on how many Baptists are iPhone users and what is the relevance of that in the context of something. What is your denomination, what country you come from, and what kind of technology you're using? Are you Mac or PC? Are you Android or iPhone? Okay? Just 30 seconds. Turn to each other. Are we ready?
Yes.
Now let's find out how many Mac users in this room. Only 4, 5, 6. Come on, Mac users. 6 users. You're a Mac user too, 7. Okay, 7. We got 7 users in the end. And the rest are PC. I presume then also with the mobiles you're on Android, the PC users are on Android, right? Or how many iPhones? How many have iPhones? Okay, more iPhone users than Mac users. But we look a little bit later at Marshall McLuhan, who said media is the message these days. Very often the media that we're using is also telling something about ourselves in one context or another. But yesterday, Margon already touched very, very clearly on who are the digital natives and who are the digital immigrants. Okay? This is one of the very good theories, or I'm not sure if it's a theory, but it's a statement that someone made. I can't remember his name, but I have it somewhere in my references. Who said that living in the digital world and in the information society is like being a citizen in a country. Now, probably the Americans, I don't know how much they would relate to this, or even the Westerners, but we from the Eastern Europe, from Romania, we had a lot of immigrants that went to the States. And it is a researcher's heaven to just look at them 10, 20, 30 years after immigrating to the States. It's also very sad, I have to confess. The people who immigrated in the 70s and 80s are stuck into Romania's of the 70s and 80s. They sing the same songs, they speak the same language, and sometimes it's really funny. They think about the same problems. They still think in terms of communists and non-communists, of Securitate and the good guys, the Christians or the whoever were the dissidents or whatever. And they somehow seem to be frozen in time. Their children are completely lost. I went to the Romanian church in Chicago. All the people my generation who emigrated in the 80s were there with their scarves on and with pretty much adapted clothing and songs and whatever from our church. And outside, on the hallway, were their children all speaking English. Some of them couldn't even speak Romanian. And being completely bored and disconnected from what was happening inside. After, we spent about a year in the States. After about 4 months, my children, who at that time, the older children were 4 and 6, after 4 months, they couldn't speak Romanian anymore. They completely switched to English. Now, the immigrants, sometimes for life, they remained marked by the experiences they had, even if they learned the language and integrate in the country. While the digital natives, they identify themselves with that society. Now, try to think that it's one of the best metaphors that you can think about the digital world. It's exactly the same. People who are born and grew up with digital technology look at it as being so normal, so natural, that somebody told me about their 3-year-old son that went to the TV and did this. Because for that child, opening a device is doing this. First device she ever held was an iPad, so she was doing this. I saw a very nice video, I didn't bring it here, but that's a very nice thing to use when you talk about it, because I'm going to also mention some of the tools that you can use in your ministry when you deal with technology. There's a very nice video on YouTube where they put in front of 8, 10-year-olds a cassette recorder, and they don't know what to do with it. What is it? They shake it. They don't, really, they don't know to push the button. They don't know to bring out the tape. If they show them a cassette, they don't know what that is. They keep trying to do this. Okay? What is the first thing we do? You know, if you drop your phone and it's ringing and it's disrupting and you just walked out, I take your phone. And what is the first thing that I try when I get somebody's phone and it's not an iPhone? I look for the buttons. Where's the button to stop it? I look for the buttons. But the younger ones, they wouldn't have a problem. They probably would know exactly how to touch it to do what it needs to do. And that's a very significant change. And if the hardware would be the only thing changing, it would be very easy, but it's not. There are many more things in terms of the content of it that are completely different. And we, the adults who are all immigrants, imagine that we are all a nation of immigrants, are not aware of a lot of these things. And there's going to be a price. And we don't know what that price is, but we can start thinking about it. Now, because I mentioned that there are theories that can help us think about technology and relate to technology. And as I was looking for such a theory, I discovered Marshall McLaughlin. Now, everybody talks about Marshall McLaughlin, but my surprise when I started to really look a little bit more seriously at him was to see that he was very controversial at his time. Marshall McLaughlin was a Canadian professor of media, and his most important works that we relate to and we talk about, Understanding Media, The Extension of Man, Gutenberg Galaxy, and other such books, he wrote in the 60s. Now try to think, what was the technology at that time in the 60s? And try to read that quote, because basically in his theories, the one that I love the most is the one that says that technology is an extension of the human body. I discovered more recently that he wasn't the only one to say that, and even before him, at the beginning of the century and around the Second World War, were other philosophers who looked at technology as an extension of the body. But he's the one who took it further, and he even had some insights in the future that are absolutely mind-blowing. Now, he also was very hermetic in his writing. I wouldn't say he was a terrible academic, but he was a lot misunderstood because also of the way he's writing. I have to confess, I was not able to read any book from end to end. He's very hermetic, and there are many books explaining his books, and those are easier to read. There are even courses on Marshall McLaughlin, and it's worth digging into his theories, but you should know it's not something easy. So I keep at the surface and just take the easiest part. His first theory says that every technology is an extension of the human body, and he goes on in this quote to say, or of the mind, or we'll get to the point where it will be an extension of the consciousness. Now, when I started to talk about this, I just look at the extension of the human body. And what does that basically mean? That as a body, we're made to walk, okay? So people are able to walk. What happened when we invented, as a technology, the wheel? What part of us was extended? Our feet, okay? And what did we accomplish with that? Speed, we can get to places faster than before. Comfort, our feet don't hurt. And actually, this is a picture that I took on the Camino. Is there the Spanish guy on the Camino? And by the time I got there, my feet were hurting. So at that time, you appreciate the any kind of extension of the body. So you know about muscles in your feet that you didn't know existed there. So that's why I put that picture. Okay, we can also go much further than before. Okay, and from the wheel, we invented the train, and then we invented the airplane, and now we can go around the world. And all these technologies are an extension of where we can physically advance. Okay, I have more pictures about that, but I'm not going to go into details. Obviously, the phone is an extension of our ears and of our sense, because usually goes with senses, of our hearing, right? The binoculars or what else in terms of the speakers, microphones, also an extension of the ear. You can hear things better from a larger distance, okay? In terms of seeing, telescopes, we can see further and further and further. Now, I almost said the TV. Now, that's another type of extension. Because, yes, we see certain things, but it's also an extension of somebody's mind. We can see into somebody else's mind, into their ideas, into how they look at things. Okay? So, basically, if we were to really make things simple, extension of the mind, no, of the body, excuse me, the extension of the body are pretty much the invention in the industrial area. All the machines, all the mechanical things came to extend body parts. Hands, feet, eyes, or senses, body parts or senses that we have. Then we had the next step, that was the extension of the mind. And that started with electricity, with radio, with television, then satellite communication, and then into the digital world and computers. Basically, computers are an extension of the mind. We can go further, we can think, we can do things that normally we do with our mind, we can do with computers at a rate that we've never thought it's possible before. The scary part is the third one, the extension of the consciousness. And at first when I saw it, I was like, ah, that's more science fiction. But how many of you did see these movies? Ah, which one, Her or Transcendence? Transcendence, what's it about, Jens? And it's not a theory, it's something that it's out there. Basically, Transcendence is about a guy who is dying for, it doesn't matter why, but he was so smart that it's a waste to waste him. So in the month that he had before dying, with the technology they had, they uploaded his consciousness. So the computer learned about him, about his speech, about his thinking, about his positions on different things. And so basically he spent the last month of his life making sure that everything that's in his head was transferred to this computer. Then he died and the computer awoke and started to talk like him because it was a computer, and he hijacked the banks and became instantly, no matter how rich he wanted, he was able to do whatever. So he developed even further, or research, everything was at his fingertips. And the rest I let for you to see. It's a movie worth watching. It's very interesting. It's made by Chris Nolan, who is the same guy who did Inception. So it's the kind of script that it's really well thought of. And very interesting to look into details on it. Her is another movie where this guy, actually in the society, there is an operating system that has a voice. And it's not any operating system, it's not a PC and it's not a Mac. It's a Her, it has a female voice because he chose a female voice. And it is an operating system that has artificial intelligence that can develop itself. And that computer started a relationship with this guy. And she has a voice of Scarlett Johansson, and very seducing voice and very interesting. And again, a movie worth watching. However, it has some explicit sexual content, although very interesting, completely only audio. And it's very interesting to look how they use it. So there are no visuals that would be disturbing, but there's some audio, and it's interesting because it taps also into things that have to do with the body and the connection of the body with the technology and embodiment and all that, those things. Now, you think this is fiction? Let me show you this. If you'll have time and you'll go online, look for Eterni Me. Do you know about it? Did you hear about that program? Now, do you know that the guy, the Romanian guy who is behind it, was my student in my master's program? Yeah. So this is really freaking out to think that a student in my master's program, he's a very smart guy. He was trained to be a medical doctor, and he has a digital content producing company. And he went to MIT this December for an entrepreneurial workshop. And there, he was part of a team, and actually he was leading the team. And the team came up with this very bright idea called Eterni Me. They want to make it into a business. They are raising money now for it, and they expect probably in 1 year to start the beta version. We're basically using artificial intelligence algorithm. They are going to collect from the person that subscribes to it. You know, let's say I do. I subscribe because I'm interested in what's happening there, but I wouldn't do that, God forbid. They would collect from your digital print online, you know, the digital trace that you leave from your mails, from your posts, from your blogs, from your pictures, from everything. They would collect and build your avatar. Okay? And just as we have now a box with pictures, My mother died recently, some month ago, and we still haven't touched the drawer with all the family pictures. And we'll have to sort them out somehow and split them with my brother, but it's very painful to look at those memories. So in a similar way, instead of having that drawer with pictures, that you recall your loved one and everyone would trigger a memory, they would build this avatar that you can ask, you can interact with, and he will tell you what their position would be on that. It's really very interesting. I looked at his interviews. He was on CNN. He was on all kind of The New Yorker more recently. And he keeps saying that the media misquoted. They don't understand what the program is. And we are not trying to build an avatar to live after. And we're not trying to make you immortal. This is a title from New Yorker where they say, simply become immortal. However, it taps into the need of the person. So with or without technologies, we have the same needs. We want to be remembered. We want to be present. We want to have a certain type of identity and self, and we build that in one way or another. So what Marshall McLuhan said in the 60s, and everybody laughed at him to the level where, I read, if you were a PhD student and quoted Marshall McLuhan, you would not get your PhD degree. It's like if you were quoting Wikipedia these days. Really. They related to him like that. And now they give courses on Marshall McLuhan because he really had a hindsight, a foresight, a way of seeing what might happen in the future. So he was so criticized by the idea of the extension that he developed it further. And he said, yes, it's right, every extension, every technology brings an extension, but then it also induces an amputation. Okay? What the amputation of the car technology would be? What happens if you use too much the car? You get fat. So first thing that happened when the Industrial Revolution came was that we stopped using certain body functions, walking being one of them. And that's one of the problems that we have these days with obesity and all kind of diseases. And we get into that absolutely unnatural situation where we go on a treadmill and we walk in place just because we've lost the ability to walk outside. And if we overextend it, you get to what you see here in this picture. You know, you can presume that in every car there is a person, at the most two, and they don't talk to each other, they don't interact with each other. So also this kind of technology brought isolation. I used to ride a bus, and then it was more complicated, and from where we lived I had to walk to the bus for 15 minutes, so I said, I don't have the time for that, and I got a car. And the moment I got my own car, I've completely lost connection with a certain category of population that rides on the bus. And I'm completely disconnected. It's very convenient, and I can do more things, and I can go faster, but it's obviously I've lost something. It amputated something that was there before. Okay? Also, he asked the question, what does the media make obsolete? What else when a technology comes is obsolete, is not used anymore? Let's think about when email started to be used. What is a technology that stopped to be used?
Handwriting.
Yeah, we're still handwriting. But if you had to send a document somewhere, what would you use? The fax machine. Now we just send a PDF. Do you still have a fax machine at home somewhere?
Yeah.
Yeah? Can we use it?
No.
No. No, we cannot use it. Let me tell you this. When we built the house, we built a new house in 2007, and we wired it, and I put in the most important places in the house, I wanted to have a phone line because we used to get our internet through the phone. So I have plugs for the phone in at least four or five places in the house, including the kitchen, because I said, I want to have a computer in the kitchen. At that time, nobody thought about it. And I was so determined about it that I made a hole into the wall to put my computer there. And behind it, in the technical room behind it, I have about seven plugs, including for the phone. It's where I keep my brooms. It's a broom closet now. And people come and say, why did you leave this here? And I said, that was supposed to be for the computer. By the time we finished the house, a laptop became enough accessible so that I have a laptop now and I can put it everywhere, and obviously I have wireless and there's nothing I can do with that technology. So this is just a sign on how fast it developed. I accessed a European project in 2008. I wrote the program, the application for a European project. And since I had to do with training managers, I said having laptops for everyone would be helpful because we're going to teach them how to use the laptops for their managerial work and whatever. So I applied and I got 40 laptops. The project got accepted, approved, and signed only in 2010. And by the time we bought the laptops, it was 2011. Between 2008 and 2011, there was the invention of the notebook that lowered the prices to such a level that by the time I had them available, every single manager had his own laptop and they said, no, I don't want another one. And it was almost unheard of. And I still had at my university in a locked cupboard 20 laptops because nobody really wanted them. That's how fast things are changing. So whenever we look at technology, try to answer, what is your favorite technology media? Why do you want it? And now we'll make this second exercise. Just turn to each other, and if it's more convenient, make groups of three, and talk a little bit about what's your favorite technology or media, and what's your favorite app on your smartphone. What does it extend for you? What do you feel it brings to your life? Okay? And also, what is the amputation you experience? I'll just give you an example. If you use your calculator all the time, obviously you don't know the multiplication table as good as you used to. Okay? That's just a very simple application. But talk a little bit now about your technology. Don't we hear from just at least one group, one interesting app that you either heard of now or that you're using and you absolutely have to share it? So something on your smartphones that really brings something, added something to your life, be it professional, personal, please.
That's my Bible.
Your Bible.
And, three options. My mother tongue in Amharic, and another in English, and the other in audio. Even if I'm tired, I can listen,
you can
audio.
Listen to it.
I can open my eyes, I can read, and accessible and everything. And I enjoy my physical Bible, but as a petition.
And maybe even in Norwegian, brother.
Lars said the same thing, and he has the same version that I have. And actually, I subscribe to a reading plan, and I'm not good at keeping up with it. And I don't disconnect it. I get every single day a mail in my email. I get an email reminding me that I haven't read my reading plan. So that's good also because it sort of rebukes me. So yeah, this is a very nice application. The audio books are a very, very interesting addition. I had a drive to Graz from Romania. It was about 12, 13, 14 hours drive with my son, and he said, I just got Steve Jobs' book. It was fresh then. And we read it, you know, two-thirds of it. We listened to it as we were driving without talking to each other. But together, and I've never done that with my son, to really be able then to talk about a book and stuff about it. And still we were, you know, doing, using another extension, a nice technology, while listening to this one. Something else?
The camera app.
The camera app, wonderful, yeah.
And the,
and the fact that we have everything with us, and more I start to use it to copy documents. You know, if I have to fax something, I just take a picture and I send it on. But I want to share another application, especially for the ones who are in the academia. It's one of the last things that I've discovered. It's called Mendeley. Probably you use reference systems in the West, but in our context, we didn't know them very much. And this is an absolutely fabulous tool where it synchronizes the browser with a desktop application that I can have on any kind of technology. I have on my phone, I have on here, I have on my computer at work, at computer on the laptop. And if I find an interesting article, I say save to Mendeley. If it's an academic journal, it will pull out the correct data, the journal, the number, the page, the author, tag names, link, everything. And if I go to my desktop device, I can read it there, I can make notes, and the nicest thing is that at the end of the work, if you know, like I work on this presentation and I need to have the references, I just drag and drop all the names on the page, and I have them in APA style, I have it in MLA style, in any kind of style I want. And it's absolutely fabulous. So for the people who are doing their master's, graduate work, PhDs, reference, there are more of them, but reference systems are one of the last things that I've discovered. And I don't feel it amputated anything, because the tedious work of writing and keeping track of your sources, you didn't lose anything with that. But I hope this helped a little bit for you to look at what you have inside. And as a joke, I have an app, the Nike app on the phone. Do you know that? Yeah, it's a fitness thing. You turn it on when you do your walk, and it traces you through GPS, and at the end of your walk, it shows not only the map of where you walked, it shows you the pace, everything, and it has voices who come and say, well done, you haven't, you did your best time in, I don't know. And you can also put your friend in there and brag about where you walked and what you did. So I was bragging to my son that I walked more than you did. And one day when I came home from walking, he said, could you drive me to the bus stop because I'm a little bit running late and I forget to turn it off. So I get on the car and we go with the car, and about a kilometer from the house, a cheering voice says, well done, it's your best time so far. You already did 5 kilometers. So my son says, ah, now I know how you reach your... But that really is an app that helps me a lot. And also it helped me to back my son into buying some equipment. I said, if you have 100 kilometers run this month, I get you this equipment. If not, by the end of the month, you have to give me back money. So that was really nice to track. What I'm trying to do with this is to show and help you see that a lot of the things that technology brings to us can enrich our lives, and they do enrich our lives. And that technology in itself, it's not bad. However, the content is not neutral. The content that we put into that technology can be also very bad, and it can be very disruptive. But as I was thinking about these things, I ran across this book called Digital Invasion, How Technology is Shaping You and Your Relationship, by Dr. Archibald Hart and Sylvie Hart Frage, who is the daughter of Dr. Archibald. And I'm glad that Lars is here from the steering committee, because I recommended him. I put him on a note where I recommend he or his daughter could be invited as speakers. It's a fabulous book, absolutely wonderful. I didn't know what to take from there. It was so good. And it just puts out questions and also brings out a lot of research into what technology is doing to us. He talks about the neuroplasticity of the brain and how studies have proven that our brains are changing. The technology that you are using, that we are using these days, are changing and rewiring our brains. Now, I know about you, I don't like anyone to mess up with my brain. I would never let myself be hypnotized, ever, just because I want to be in control of my brain. But I have to agree that in pervasive ways, we are being rewired. And it's not this theory of conspiracy that somebody is conspiring to rewire my brain. It's just, it's happening. We are reading in a different way than we did before. We are processing the information in a different way. And I see this in myself, how much more this happens with our children. I'm the immigrant who has to learn this language. But our children are growing in this. And I think one of the biggest failures with education is that they cannot, do not, and don't know how to keep up with these changes. They either jump on the side where let's use all the technology and have the classrooms that are all electronic and everybody is with a tablet, or they go on the other side where they say no technology, you're not allowed to touch anything, we only use the natural things. Neither of these situations is correct in the current context. But things are happening, and in terms of what an extension does to us, think about the printing press. In the media literature, they say that the invention of the printing press completely revolutionized the world, and the first effect was the Industrial Revolution and the Reformation 200 years later. And there was resistance to printing, right? Especially the established church would say, you know, having the printing press means to give knowledge to all those stupid people who don't know what to do with it. We know better what to do with it. So let's keep the control of information. Obviously, they couldn't do that anymore. And there were results 100 years down the street. The exchanges and the changes in technology these days are happening now. And we see the results in our lives, in our children's lives. There are 10 years between my children, so 10 and 12 years between the older one and the younger one. And my older son was a very good partner of discussion about technology, and he loves technology, and we had some of the most wonderful discussion I ever had with anyone about technology were with my son. And he had a capacity of talking about it and helping me to understand how he's processing it. And then he started looking at his brother and he said, wow, he's 26 now. He said, wow, where would I be these days if I had the access that this kid is having at 12 or 14? You know, so even in such young people, you see the differences. I don't know if you observe differences between generations of students. You know, I've been teaching for 20 years, and obviously, sometimes you have smarter students, sometimes not so interested, but 10 years ago, 20 years ago, the differences between one generation of student and the next year were much smaller than they are now. And I can tell that they are determined and they come with different knowledge. And you have to relate to them differently. Now, education should understand these things, and especially educators should understand. And the role of the educator has changed completely in the last years. Unfortunately, the majority of educators choose to teach the same way. And then most of the time you have the good students who would just reject you and be silent and well-behaved but not engage, and then do their own things. And that's the saddest part of all. Another thing then, the neuroplasticity of the brain is the addictions, and Dr. Hart is dedicating a full chapter to that. And he talks about how the use of technologies activates centers in the brain that create pleasure, just as pleasure is created in gaming, in gambling, in drugs, in sex, and other things that can become addictive. And I don't know about you, but I love that feeling when I sit down after a hard day, I flip open my computer, and I either watch a movie or series, or I go on Facebook and I just browse there and see what's happening. I like it. And I realize, you know, it brings a certain type of pleasure. Now, the problem with this kind of pleasure is that once you've had it, you want more. And then you go up and do something and come back and do the same thing. And you watch another series. And Netflix even adapted to this. And they say, why do you have to wait for a whole week or a month for the next series? We're going to give you all the 15 of them. And you can binge watch them. Okay? And sometimes we slip into that. And I do not believe there is anyone that didn't slip into one type of addiction or another. Now, there are moments when you can become so addicted that you cannot fix it. And I think this is one of the things that I'm trying to do, to, from time to time, to look inside me and say, what are the little addictions that I have right now? And how do I have to trim them? And one of the things that I observed is that if I consume information, and I consume a lot of news, so I have to read the news more times in a day, even if nothing happened, I still read them more times in a day, I cannot produce something. And if I have to write something, or if I have to do a conference or something, I have to disconnect myself. If I want to produce something, usually I say, okay, for 2 days, no more laptop, no more Facebook, no more news. And sometimes it's hard to reach this. And after I disconnect for a while, I can produce something. So this is one of the things that happened. We were turned into media consumers rather than people who can produce thought, who can produce and bring new things. And I'm not even touching on the sick addictions. I'm not even going there, because there are many workshops that deal here with sex addiction, with gambling, with other things that can destroy our marriages, our life. And like John Lennox said, it's one click away. And it happens in the church. It happens with the Christians, because we can hide it better than any time before. I just draw attention to your little addictions, to this slipping, to the things that stop you from being the best you can be because of certain technologies. So where is the limit between using it for good or for bad? And just a few thoughts you have on your notes. How should we then live in the information age? Turn off everything, switch off our computers, don't give our kids a phone, don't let them on the internet. Personally, I don't believe this is a solution. Because if we switch them like this, they are going to find it somewhere else. And, you know, we can live like the Amish, without electricity or whatever, but it's basically, it would be the same thing if we would cut technology. However, if we are on top of things, if we understand what everything can extend and what can it amputate in our life, if we can teach our children to be responsible and we can check them, then we can be advice user and we can use the technology for us and in our advantage. In our church, we started a program some years ago. Cosmin, who is here, and I'm proud to say he's another student of the master's program, so we didn't produce just the guy with the tandem, but a student like this. He had on his heart this thing about, he's in the youth ministry. How do you relate to technology? How do we teach the parents to to supervise their children because it was obviously that they were completely oblivious about things. So he started, and together with our youth pastor, they started a program called Media Safe. He, in preparation, he brought us together, a few of us who work with this. We have a friend who is a social media specialist in a computer company, and we would talk for hours, and we were amazed to discover what things can come up if you start talking about things. You know, like we let you hear, talk about your technologies. We started to talk about Facebook, and we started to share how we see members of the church from the Facebook. And how I discovered who were the women who were vain, because they had their picture all the time on Facebook, on all, not bad pictures, but never with the son, never with the husband, always herself. We had another one who would post about recipes and all the foods that she was cooking, and she was also pretty fat. And then she started I would get all these notifications about the games that they were playing, and I'm like, I can't believe that this brother has the time to play Farmville, you know? And we decided to invite that woman who was a grandmother who used to put pictures of her food, and who by that time she sort of overcame her stage of being vain on Facebook. And she came and she had a very powerful witness in front of the other parents about, she said, I got invited by a friend and I said, I can't go because I have to pick up my strawberries on Farmville. And she said, I asked my husband to check me and make sure that I never go on games anymore. She put a post there and she said, don't send me any games. And if you want my recipes, go on this blog, that it's a culinary blog. And she's the one who now posts blessings every morning. She takes pictures of the town because she walks every day. And at 7 o'clock in the morning, she has pictures from the hill on top of Cluj and with a blessing for that morning. And she did it every day. And I said, I'm amazed that you really walk every day. And she completely changed her relationship with social media. Or I would wake up Sunday morning and have a glance at the Facebook, and she would say, you get up and go to church. It's Sunday. That was her post on Facebook, you know. So we created a context where to talk about these things. And it was once a month for 6 months. There were six topics about social media, internet. You're going to present this. Okay, go ahead. Why don't you present this? And after we did it for a year, next year when we started again, we had laptops, the laptops that I didn't use in the program. We brought them in the room, and we had parents setting up Facebook accounts and teaching them to use social media so that they can relate to their children and what their children were doing. So I hand it on to Cosmin now for the sake of the recording. So Cosmin Kret, and he's going to present something about this program.
Yeah, actually, the lady Rudika mentioned, it's one of our best examples. Actually, according to some studies, the fastest, you know, the fastest growing segment of population on Facebook, it's women. After, you know, 60s, retired because they have so much time that they had to, you know, pick up, you know, strawberries. It started easily. I mean, this program started about 3 years ago. At that time, our daughter, she was in the kindergarten, and almost every week I had a lot of signals from the parents, you know, friends, and some of them, they claim that they are very good at technology and media, and they know everything. And some of them, actually the majority of them, they said, I don't care about these things. I'm not good at it. I don't know what's on the computer. I don't know what's on the internet. I barely use my email. So I don't want to deal with this. So actually, I reacted to this kind of statements, and I said, Well, our churches, they don't address this kind of topics. We talk about many other good things, but when it comes to specific topics like that, our pastors are simply not prepared to do this. So our parents, again, as I said, they were split in two. I mean, some of them believed that they were very good at technology, and the other said, we don't care about this. They were total ignorance. And the kids, they were in the middle. So let me show you this clip again. Let's take a look at this. This is a very good example of our parents.
Emma. 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 Emma.
So, technology can help you, but not in every situation. So, here's another one.
Sag mal, Papa, habe ich dich noch gar nicht gefragt. Wie kommst du eigentlich mit dem neuen iPad zurecht, was wir dir zum Geburtstag geschenkt haben?
Gut.
Bei den ganzen Apps kommst du klar?
Was denn für Apps? Geh mal bitte in die Stadt.
Okay, so basically when you have to deal with media, Rudika mentioned as well, you have only three choices. So you either, saturate, I mean, which means you accept everything and just swallow everything you you're fed with. Either you isolate, and this is the case of our many churches, when you reject everything related to media and say this is evil, so we don't want to have nothing to do with media. And the other option that we promote actually is transformation. You have to engage with media, as Rudika said already, and take the good parts of it and learn how to avoid, you know, the dark side of it. So this was basically the idea of our course, and we were trying to do this by educating parents in the first place, and then helping them to monitor their activity and their children. But again, we started with parents, but soon after that we moved to young people and pastors, and in the last 2 years we traveled a lot in many cities in Romania at different conferences or youth meetings and even parents' meetings. And because they started to realize, I mean, our churches, they started to realize that this is an issue that we cannot ignore anymore.
So, yeah, please. Can you just mention what are the main topics that we addressed in the different sections?
Sure.
And then maybe have still 3-4 minutes for questions.
Yeah, we...
Just highlight them.
We basically divided our course in three main topics. We said that media is ambivalent, right? So it exactly like the Roman Empire. This is the web they built in those ages, and those roads they carried good and bad. We all know that. So the idea of the internet and web, it's not new at all. So this is the web today, but the connections are the same. The same roads carry the good things and the bad things. So that's why it makes it difficult to choose, because everything is so mixed. Okay, media is persuasive, of course. It's not easy to deal with it, and its effects are measurable and long-lasting. We always say that media is virtual. Basically, the content is virtual, it's behind the screen, but the consequences are real. Mm-hmm. So, and of course, media influence can be controlled. It's not a lost battle. And these were some of the topics we addressed, because we divided media, the content, right? in this kind of very, very practical topics. So we talked about the internet and the mobile, so the internet that is not connected to a wire anymore, as many of our parents still believe. We talked about social media, especially with a special highlight on Facebook. We talked about online gaming and lately, you know, the phone, the applications, the games that you have on your phone. And, of course, related to pornography, violence in games and all that. We talked a lot about music and what music videos did, you know, with MTV. Because music is still a powerful influencing, you know, domain of media. We talked about movies, about TV shows, very fascinating topic about cartoons, because our parents, our grandparents especially, they believe that if that's a cartoon, it's fine. But you all know, if you're watching cartoons with your kids, that cartoons today are not what they used to be, or so they can be very, very damaging. And of course, science documentaries, this is my favorite one. I like them a lot, and again, very good things, a lot of true things there, discoveries that you cannot see in any other places, are mixed with a lot of evolutionism, and a lot of ideas that if you're not strong in your faith, and if you're a young man or, you know, teenager, you can be easily messed up. So, just some photos from our meetings. The first year we did some conferences with we had some guests, talk show type of meeting, where we invited, actually this was our approach. We didn't want to invite pastors there or youth leaders, so we gathered a team of professionals, and Rodica is one of them, and invited them to share their experience on what they do, actually. They are from our churches, but they are professionals in their area. So we invited them on these topics. Rodica is one of them. Again, this is our social media friend. We built a website, a Facebook page. We tried to create awareness. And the next year, we did some workshops with a smallest number. These are the computers that Rodica borrowed, actually, which was a big help for us there. And we did some workshops with smaller number of parents. We have many stories about this, and some of the parents they actually took some very radical decision. They started to buy for themselves, you know, smartphones. They started to open Facebook accounts just to, you know, be friends with their children. They started to you know, regulate, you know, timing on the internet, whatever. So. And this is our logo, of course. It's a lot to talk about this, but I hope you at least got an idea. And probably it's not the best example, but it's something that you definitely can do.
Sorry for not leaving enough time for questions, but maybe we can do that over coffee. Thank you for hearing us.
Thanks a lot. Let's give them a big hand, both of them.